Welcome to True Hoop with me, Gerard Hector, and Coach David Thorpe. How are you, sir?
Warm.
It's like, what, 80-something in Florida right now?
It's, yeah. Everyone thinks it's all fun and games, and except for hurricane season, but it is not fun to walk out at 7 o'clock in the morning. My wife walks at, you know, 6-something, right. And it's hot, and like, we've already, come on, it's fucking March. We've had cold Aprils and Mays on occasion. This has been the warmest winter, and it's a fucking hot as fuck March. Pollen everywhere. Yeah, it sucks. Not fun to be in Florida for lots of reasons. Oh, right, yeah, well,
yeah. The weather on your coast, right. Aside, no.
Just, yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have a fucked up place right now.
You know, one of the things that, you know, we pride ourselves on True Hoop here is not only do we reveal truths about the NBA and the larger sports world, you know, we are very fortunate that we have your insight and your basketball brain. By the way, we had a tactics come out last week. Make sure you guys check that out. You get inside the big brain of Coach David Thorpe. Beginning of the season, you said, you know, guys, I just think all these teams are kind of like even. There's no one super uber dominant team that's blowing everybody out. Like, there's like 10, 12 teams that are in the mix. And sure enough, if you look at the standings, everybody's kind of jumbled together in both conferences. And these last 18 to 20 games or so, they all matter for every team, Coach. And last night, we had four national games, 2 on ABC and 2 on ESPN, and all four of them mattered for the teams.
Yeah, I mean, I thank you for saying I'm smart. I'm not stupid when it comes to basketball. I'm wrong all the time, though. But it seems pretty obvious to me going, well, we wrote an article preseason about, you know, this is about as close to the NFL as it's been in my career covering the NBA since, 06 or 07. There's like you said, there's no real super team. There are some really good teams, great teams. But I mean, look at the Knicks Celtics yesterday. It went double overtime, but like New York probably should have won that game in regulation. Should've. And they're on the road. And Boston's healthy.
And without Jalen Brunson.
Exactly. The Knicks are missing their best player. So it didn't – I watched it on Synergy today, the last fourth quarter and the overtimes. It wasn't fluky. I'd pick Boston to win that series. But it's going to be a bear. these playoffs, it's all rolling into what could very well be the most exciting playoffs we've had ever. Yeah. Like that – lots of 6 and 7 game series, and each of those games can be not all of them, but many of them really exciting. So yeah, this is fun.
No, it is awesome. And you know, we're always here trying to figure out how we can extol the virtues of the NBA to the larger casual fan. And you know, this is it, right? Like if a regular season doesn't matter. No, it matters. Like those games are all crucial. Pick a team. I don't care whoever you want to root for. These next 18 to 20, like unless they're tanking, right? Charlotte, Houston, San Antonio. Everybody else in Detroit, these games matter, right? And so this is exciting. Last night we had, for the first time in NBA history, 18 people with at least 30 points in the NBA. And this is something that, you know, we've talked about on the show. The talent across this league right now is so good. You even look at a team like Orlando, who they're probably not going to make the play-in. But, Paolo's good. Like, they're good. That team has got people, they're young, and then, you know, as David always says, young kids are stupid, and they don't know how to play the game the right way, but yet they're learning, but the talent is very evident, right? It's not like back in the day where, you know, you got these teams, you're like, man, there's no talent on these rosters, right? Like, these are some good players in this league.
Yeah, I'm an expert in stupid and young players. I know both really well, and I was dumb myself, and I've got, I told you, off air, my 21-year-old son was lovingly admitting that he has an electric razor and doesn't know how to use it. Sweet, we did a good job raising him. The interesting thing is, of the 18 that had 30 or more, OKC had one, and it wasn't Shea Gilgeous.
It was not.
It was Jalen Williams. Rookie Jalen Williams from Santa Clara, who we love. Not only do we have a lot of talent, but as we've been saying all season, also as the season has evolved, the league is getting more tactical. The Knicks-Celtics game, a little bit notwithstanding, a lot of ISO in that game. I watched a lot of the Clippers-Grizzlies second half, and the Clippers ran a lot of stuff and gave up 51 points in the third quarter that we'll get to. But like, they wasn't just throwing the ball to Kawhi and get out of the way at all. And as someone who watches as much tape as I do, I've been doing it since, you know, 6:30 this morning. There's just a lot of tactics that teams are running. It's still all based on an individual player's talent, and you're building off that, but they're not just throwing it to him and clearing it out commonly. And so that causes problems for defenses. Where do we orient? What's our main focus? Knowing that we played yesterday, we're playing in 2 days from now. It's easy to get distracted. It's a very challenging time to be an elite defensive player, elite defensive team. And even if you are, I talked to a team. I talked to a coach the other day. Trout has got a great head for defense. And his goal was to keep the other team's all-star guard from going crazy. And that guy had 41 points. But
they won the game.
He didn't. He had very few assists, and they lost.
Okay.
And the coach said, you know, yeah, we try to slow him down, but secondary to that, we want to make sure he didn't get other people off too. And that worked. You got to kind of pick your poison and build around it. And they did that. And this is the challenge for NBA teams every night.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we're going to get to this in the, when we talk about the Dallas Phoenix game, but you know, defending these elite players that create with the ball in their hand. I mean, it's just hard, man. Like they, and yes, the rules slant in their favor anyway, which makes it even harder for you as a defender, right? It's already difficult to guard these guys straight up. Now, if the offense is slanted in their favor, I mean, my God, which is why you got to appreciate players like Draymond Green, Drew Holiday, right? Like guys who like, you know, they still find a way. Because it's not about, as you always say, you're not going to shut the guy had 41 points. So you didn't shut him down, but he didn't get anybody else involved, right? So you figured out a way. And like it was something with Drew. All right, guys go score 38 and on, but late in the game, I got to poke away steal that, right? It's possessions, these little moments, right, that are going to help you win games because you're not going to stop these elite players. They're just way, way too difficult and too hard to cover.
Well, we talk about having short memories. Have you watched all the Ted Lasso?
Not all of it.
Early on, he talks about you got to be a goldfish. You know, you got to just have a short-term memory. There's all sorts of different, you know, comments about that. It's something we deal with a lot with young players offensively. If you can't, I told one player who's in the NBA, he was a teenager, and he was I saw him this summer. And he was like basically in tears, missing shots. No one was in the gym except for his coaches. Yeah, so he was just really emotional when he'd miss shots in front of the coaches that were watching. And I was just mentoring his trainer. And we had to pull him aside and say, like, you have no shot to make the NBA. You can't play professional basketball if you can't handle missing shots. The same thing is the case defensively, Gerard. If you can't handle Devin Booker scoring in your eye, if you can't handle getting dunked on in the paint in this league, you got to find another profession. And really, it won't be basketball because at every level, you're going to have this kind of stuff to some degree. And this is the best league in the world. That's what the money's for, is we think you can handle it. You'll be successful more often than not. That's why we're paying you. But you're not going to be perfect. Everyone gets scored on. The narrative, you know, the Jordan narrative, I always laugh about this. You know, all of his wins. He was incredible. Like, you get no argument from me. I built my teaching of the game offensively based a lot on what he did. I still teach permanent pivot foot. That was all stuff I stole from MJ. But watch his games. He needed the Knicks to miss those layups and miss all those free throws in game 7 and on and on and on. He got scored on plenty of times, right? He missed plenty of shots. Like, this is these pro sports. Well, I should say sports in general, it's baked into the DNA. Failure is baked in. And so learn from it. Don't attach emotion to it. When you're trying to guard these great scores, when they're running good stuff for him, get smarter, get better, talk to your teammates. When we get to the Celtics-Knicks game, there was a great scene. I sent this to you. With Marcus Smart and Grant Williams that made me think, oh, this team's got the goods. Yeah, when we get to it, remind me. I'll talk about Marcus Smart.
No doubt. We'll definitely talk about that. Let's start with the last game from last Clippers. Night, which was the Grizzlies-Clippers. Clippers won that 135-129. Everyone knows David Thorpe's rule. If you're going to win basketball games, if you outscore the opponent by 10 and don't get outscored by 10 or more.
In one quarter. If you just one quarter win by 10 or more, it's like 90-something percent the last 5 or 6 years I've tracked it, or four or five years in the postseason. A little bit different than the regular season. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had quite the game last night because Memphis put up 51 points on the Clippers in the third quarter.
Hold on. Let's be very clear. I watched it. Ready? 51 minutes, 51 points in the last 11 minutes of the third quarter. Yes. They didn't score the first minute in 15 seconds.
Correct.
51 points in 11 minutes.
They missed they like hit five everything. Shots. Tyus Jones hitting everything. Everything was going in. Every shot was going in. And as David often says, when teams do that, you're probably going to lose, right? It's just shit happens. Right.
But
the fourth quarter comes and the Clippers outscore the Grizzlies 38 to 17. And they end up winning the game. Oh man, what a tale of two quarters. Two halves. Wow. So much to unpack in that game. Let's first start with what you saw from the Clippers defensively in the third quarter that was like, we can't stop these guys.
Well, if you took away their turnovers and some of the transition buckets, it would have been a bad quarter. 51 points is an abomination. Like, guys get fired for that kind of stuff in theory, right? So they didn't help themselves with some of their turnovers and some of the transition points. Memphis, I mean, I'm only guessing they missed five shots. I'm not wrong by a shot or two. Because I really think at one point I was counting it was 17 for 22. And I'm not sure they missed maybe but one more shot after that. They just couldn't miss. And it wasn't just, first of all, Ja didn't play. Jaren Jackson hits a three. It's a great putback dunk. Bane hits some threes. Tyus Jones was unbelievable. Salty.
Santi Aldama. Yep.
Tillman was like Eurostepping.
Yes, and Tillman.
like he's some kind of ballerina. they just were on fire. And as Memphis is wont to do, I think they kind of lost their edge when they had that kind of success and got their ass kicked in the fourth quarter. And on the flip side, Ty Lue's been around. Paul and Kawhi, those guys, you know, the Clippers run good stuff. They do. I don't know why their offense sucks so bad too often. In the third quarter, their defense was bad, but it just made worse by the turnovers. They were better in the fourth quarter. I'm not ready to quit on the Clippers, Sherrod.
You, you like them. Well, I'll tell you why I'm not ready to quit on them. I watched the phrase you love to use is disposition to dominate. Paul George had that from the tip of that game. Just relentless attack on both ends of the floor, by the way. Attacking the rim on offense and was engaged defensively. Had a great late strip on Jaren when the Grizzlies were running a curl play. Instead of following his man, he's like, oh, Jaren's not paying attention. Stop, strip, go the other way, right? Like, it was, and then Kawhi, you know, the metronome. He's just like, okay, shots he's weren't coming. Going in the first he's two coming. Quarters. We're going to go now.
You know, if you take away all the histrionics and some of the crazy things that Gilbert Arenas did, one thing I remember when I was at ESPN when he first was really kind of coming in, man, I just love that he was always coming forward. Always, always, always relentless. That's Kawhi. Just he's coming. He's coming. He's coming. And he defends too. And that combination, they're really getting murdered in the paint. And they were in the third quarter for sure. Plumlee, I thought, would help. He hasn't yet. They've been maybe the second worst team in the NBA in paint defense since they got him.
Not great.
But let's give them time a little bit. But that's got to be fixed. They've got to clean up their paint defense.
And look, to be fair, the Grizzlies are also the number one, number two paint scoring team in the league. So it's not like, you know, some team that doesn't score in the paint all of a sudden.
Although they were missing Steven Adams.
Now, John Morant's a big part of that. Right. He didn't play, but Jaren scored a lot in the paint. You know, we talked about his offensive game. That part's coming too. And he's getting the ball and on the move and getting to his left off the bounce. I saw with the rotations, and this is a Grizzlies thing, and we'll get to this too later when we talk about some comments Mike Breen made. Taylor Jenkins, the Grizzlies head coach, has these rotations set, and it's the starters, they're resting at the start of the fourth quarter, and they generally don't come in until about the 7 or 8 minute mark. And in watching games, he doesn't seem to change that. Maybe that's something that changes in the playoffs, but this is a large part of why I see them often losing leads in the fourth quarter after a great third quarter.
My guess is it's a sports science decision. You know, that would make some sense, right? That the doctors are saying, here's what we're doing, and we're sticking with it. Coach around that. I love that, by the way. I love that. You force yourself to play other guys. Let them develop. When you need them, they've now, Tillman has played a bunch. I really like that. And to answer your point, I think it would change in the postseason, especially after round one, should they make it, where you've got a little, where it's every other night, like clockwork. Mm-hmm. That first round is a little bit different because sometimes they have more rest, but you're not playing back-to-backs ever. I could see that being tweaked a little bit for sure. And maybe depending on who you are, like a skinnier guy like John Morant doesn't carry as much weight, can play more than maybe the Adams and whatever. But yeah, I think that we'll talk about John Morant because that's really going to dictate everything, is how they handle this whole thing.
And so, yes, that is the elephant in the room, so to speak. We talked about this with Howard Beck last week. Since that time, another incident occurred. So the Grizzlies were in Denver on Friday to play the Nuggets, number one versus number two matchup. That was actually a good game until probably the 2-minute mark of the fourth quarter. Then, as you say, Grizzlies are wont to do, drop the rope and, okay, it was over. On his IG Live, so at some point, I don't know if they were still in Denver or they landed in LA, wherever it was. They were on the road, though. Because
I think it was in Denver, but I might be wrong. Night. But I thought it was still in Denver.
But either way, they were on the road on NBA business. Ja Morant's in a club, and you see him clearly looking like he was inebriated, waving a pistol inside of the club. Now, that is another gun incident, and we've talked about this last week, on top of three prior incidents where no one's 100% sure there was a gun, but people thought there was in those other incidents. This is now fourth time. Where the smoke, there's fire. We talked about all this. Since then, the Grizzlies first put out a statement that said he'll be away from the team for at least two games, right? And we talked about that in our chat. Oh, that's NBPA language in there. Can't say suspended. Can't do this. Can't do that. Taylor Jenkins, before the game yesterday, said there's no timetable for Ja's return. Howard brought up the excellent point that the NBA has security guys. And like, I don't mean like your typical mall security. We're talking about people with FBI, police contact, ex-FBI, ex-CIA, ex-police. Like, they got every bit of information on everything their players are doing. Same thing with the teams. So this stuff isn't new, right? The team has known what's going on for a while. This stuff is coming out and something had to be done. And David, I know you have experience with young players who, you know, need to grow up and mature. And you always say, you don't judge young kids by their, they are allowed to grow up and mature. One of the things that I believe the NBA is not good at, there is no mechanism in place for going from a zero to a hero, which is basically what John Morant was, right? An unheralded high school player. You play at Murray State?
Yeah.
Murray State. No one thought you were going to be anything. You become the number two pick in the league. You win Rookie of the Year. By your third year, you're all NBA. You're an all-star star. I mean, Nike shoot. Talk about stock market. Like, that thing went like this. It didn't go slow. No. The meteoric rise. Nobody is equipped to handle going from a relative nothing to, oh my God, I'm one of the most famous people on the planet, and I have riches beyond my wildest dreams. That is just not normal. And people who aren't well-equipped to handle that will struggle, and that's what we're seeing with John Morant right now.
I mean, it's a tale as old as time, and it doesn't even matter if he came, let's say his parents were both, you know, heart surgeons. It's still such a new thing, fame, as opposed to success. Mm-hmm. He has both. Mm-hmm. How many Hollywood actors have had this same problem, right?
Dozens, right. Multi-dozens.
Look at the meltdown of the guy at Uber. Like, we could go on and on. Mm-hmm. The gun thing is different. And I would tell you this. My first thought when I heard about this latest thing was, remember when the NBA said there wasn't a laser attached to a gun when the Pacers claimed that there was? Mm-hmm. I'm not so sure I believe the NBA anymore. Right? it seems like they're brandishing something for a reason, him as well. And unfortunately for me, I have lots of experience coaching young players. I have no idea what Jaws, like, I have no idea what his dad did for a living. I know nothing. I don't know anything about it. I know he went to a smaller school in Murray State, but I coached some kids from real crime infested areas, very poor areas. And all my players were so fucking thankful to be basketball players and also some of the football players, except for a pair of brothers I had. This was late 80s, early 90s, the Davis brothers. I think it was Mino and Reno. I forgot Reno's name, but it was Mino and Reno. And my players started telling me, coach, they had transferred from another school to coach. They're like, these guys are hanging out with guns. And And I knew these players, one of them was an amazing, would have been an all-American level football player in college, but he also was good basketball. They weren't really buying what I was selling. They weren't really connecting with us. The younger brother was killed first in a murder. He was murdered with a gun. Mm-hmm. His older brother was dead within a year, also shot to death in St. Pete, both in St. Pete. Tragic, tragic stuff. And I've been at games, literally, Gerard, in one game was an overtime game on the road where we were playing this other team in a tournament, but it was the home team. And some dude, it was cold outside, but it was Ocala, Florida. It wasn't 8 degrees. It was probably 50. Right. He had a couple really big warm coats on, which isn't such a shock sometimes. And he dropped a pistol right into our team. We were just like, the game went like three overtimes. So we're playing a very famous team. And our guys are gathered around our head coach and we're going through stuff. And you could hear the clunk of metal hitting wood. And my players had seen plenty of guns. And so the only cool thing about it is afterwards, they're all debating what gun it was. I didn't have any idea. Right. I had seen a few guns. Our housekeeper used to keep a gun when she took care of us on the weekends, but I never touched one. They had seen guns a lot. And so I just play all this in my mind. And the other thing I'll say is, we're all worried about Ja. Right.
Of course.
I thought the Grizzlies should suspend him for the month of March. I think they were smart to say indefinitely. Two games is a freaking it's load management. Right. Let's be serious about this. I've said this before on our show. I've read books on Chris Farley and John Belushi, and those were drugs, not guns. But the drugs kill too, and they're both dead. And they'll be dead forever. We'll never see them again. I know death more than I ever used to because I lost my dad a year ago. Those guys are never coming back. And none of us want for Ja to be on either side of that gun if something happens. Because either way, I said on our talk yesterday, or I texted, or maybe I said it this morning, like Ja Morant's going to make $500 million in endorsements in his career.
Easy.
He is going. Easy. Yeah. I didn't even know the sneaker thing you were just telling me earlier. This guy's going to be selling life insurance or annuities, or like he is going to be the face of a generation. One of the faces. Like Kobe would have been had he stayed alive. I want him to have that. And I want people to talk to him about it, you know?
Yeah, no, that's the big thing. And I think, you know, just from the human aspect of this, you know, again, as David said, we care about Ja as a person. Like I don't want guns kill too many people. Like we don't need to be involved in anything remotely associated with something that can wind up causing you or people around you to die. Like that's just unnecessary. We don't need that. And so it's not hyperbolic. He's at a crossroads. This moment right now is a crossroads. Does he understand what the situation is, what is in front of him, not just professionally, but what he can do in life and what he can do in terms of his platform, what he can do for other people, communities, etc.? Like, again, the type of money and fame that is coming his way, that's already here, but the more that's coming, this is generational type stuff. Like the Morant family, we're talking about, is set for multi-generations, right? This is a lasting legacy type of thing. And often when you're in your early 20s, you don't think like, right? That's not, your brain doesn't go there, right? Because you're young and you're, part of the reason you make the NBA, you're macho, it's machismo, it's this, that, and the third, right? You don't, hey, I'll worry about that later. A gun will quickly make sure there is no later, right? Like real quick. So again, what happens from here going forward will be crucial. If he turns the corner, if he understands, I've got to be better, because he's in charge, David. As the person who is making all the money, you're in charge, my guy. Not your dad, not your mom, not your friends. You are the guy as the breadwinner. It's you. And if they aren't supporting you in this new vision you have of being the best version of yourself, as difficult as it's going to be, they got to go, right? Look, LeBron's famous for it, right? That circle's small and tight. You're not part of this vision that I have going forward. You can't be here, right? Because I can't risk my life. Just got a, I don't know how old she is, young daughter, two maybe three, right? Like that's, you don't want anything going wrong that's going to affect her and your family's future. So this is, again, this is so key for him right now. This is a turning point.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is guns invite a whole another segment of society that you want no part of.
Yeah.
You want no part of. It's way beyond race and age. It's guns are just fucking killers. And people associated with guns are not afraid of that. And it's just, I mean, I've been in gyms where they've cleared me out because the wrong person walked in. And they didn't care that I was the only white dude in the gym. They were worried about themselves too. You know, it's just no place for him to be.
There are people out there who do this for real.
Exactly.
Right. Who this is what
exactly
they do.
Right.
And they don't care, right? They have very low regard for their own life, so they have no regard for yours. So again, it's not something you want to play in. So again, I hope that this works out well for him personally. Yeah. Look, clearly it's going to affect the Grizzlies as a team, right? That's obvious because however long he's away, this is going to hurt them. But David always likes to find silver linings. This means other people have to play minutes now. That means you're going to develop. Now, as a Grizzlies fan, I wouldn't want you to be developing in the last 18 games that we head towards the playoffs. But listen, what do you always say? The storm's coming in the NBA, right? Somehow, some fashion. Well, Memphis, it's here.
Yeah.
Okay? Like, and y'all got to weather it
somehow. They lost the game against Clippers, but Tyus Jones had a hell of a game. Like, we know what he can do.
He had a hell of a game.
This is, you can learn from it. You hope to turn into a positive, but it remains to be seen.
Yeah, only time will tell that. All right, Knicks-Celtics, two double overtime win. First of all, the Knicks, 9 games in a row. Heretofore, the hottest team in the NBA. Took that over from the Milwaukee Bucks, who lost to Philly on Saturday. Man, that was some physical ball. It was, to your point, we talked about it off air, a lot of ISO down the stretch. I think it was the end of regulation, and I saw it coming, David. They're like, all right, we're going to go to Randle again, because that play before worked. And I was like, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Jalen Brown kind of like ducking, waiting in turn. As soon as he turned, whoop, steal. You know, no possession to win the game there. And that's why we often say, hero ISO ball. That's not the way to do it, right? You run stuff. Run stuff for your best guys, but run stuff.
I am focusing on the Knicks this week. I don't think I've done an article since they drafted RJ Barrett. I don't think I've done a real Knicks expose, but I'm going to focus on them this week. They depend on a lot of isolation stuff. And yet, without Jalen Brunson, quickly was tremendous, right? 38 in 58 minutes.
Yeah. And 55 minutes.
Come I'm concerned about them having to play on wheelchairs in the postseason, but there's a lot of fight. There's a lot of swagger. There's a lot of toughness there. Boston moved me a little bit. They lost the game. They were down 7, minute 15 or so to play in regulation and tied it. There was a play in overtime one, I want to say, where Grant Williams was trying to force quickly into a screen for the switch, and he got beat. He allowed quickly to refuse the screen. The defense was not built for that. It quickly got a straight line drive dunk, and Marcus Smart was upset. The Celtics come down the court. Grant Williams runs to the short corner, dunk spot. Marcus Smart gets fouled. The millisecond the whistle blows, he kind of seeks out Grant Williams, who seeks him out, and Marcus Smart grabs him and touches him like the Coneheads used to touch foreheads. That's how they showed affection. But Marcus Smart was on him, and Grant Williams like, that's on me. That's on me.
He knew it.
And I thought, okay. Like, he's from what I understand, he's a pain in the ass, Grant Williams. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, crazy smart, Rondo kind of smart, which can cause problems. This is what I've heard.
Always. Yep. Causes problems.
Can't get mad at a guy who says, I fucked up. And I love that Marcus Smart didn't ignore it. That's a sign that Boston, they're my favorite. They were before with Milwaukee. It's right there with the Middleton being, you know, just okay and not great. A little more worried about Milwaukee, even though they did win 14 in a row, whatever, they lost to Philly, who's still alive too. But the Knicks, the point is, we started the show talking about parity and everything. I don't even know where the Knicks are going to be in the seedings.
Well, they're fifth right now. They're only a game behind Cleveland, so they could easily take fourth.
So my point is this. If they win their first round and Boston holds on to the one seed, let's go. New York, Boston, round two. They're going to be like physical, tough battles. Yes. Boston has the edge in talent, but the Knicks have some cooking for sure. It'll be a great series.
They do. Look, you know Tibbs is going to have those guys guarding the hell out of the – as they do. I worry about them late because of that isolation, stagnant ball. I'm like, oh, well, I think they're going to figure that – and the minutes. Like,
tough combination.
I mean, I think
his
rotation – his rotation in that double overtime game went eight deep. I was like, what are we doing? Eight guys. Like, and two of those eight only played like 20 minutes.
They don't
like,
rest all quickly. All these guys need to be sitting the next game. I just don't trust that they will be.
No, they won't be. They won't, because they're on a roll right now. And this is how Tibbs grinds, you know. Listen, we know what it is. All right. The early game on Sunday on ABC. Mavericks and Suns. Boy, you know, we NBA like rivalries are hard because guys move and whatever, and you have to have a playoff history. Well, these two teams have a playoff history. Phoenix was up 2-0 against them last year.
I forgot about that.
Remembers Luka saying, yeah, and at the end of game two, Luka's walking off the court and the mic's picking up. Everybody likes to act tough when they're up. Well, we know what happens after that. Mavericks won in seven, not just winning in seven. Game seven was over within the first 3 minutes. Like they just blew them out from the jump, blew their doors off. And I was like, whoa. So we had quite the game. Kevin Durant and Devin Booker were sensational as usual. Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving were also very good. Luka didn't shoot well, but got to the line a ton. At the end of the game, Luka does a move that, you know, coach loves to talk about this, where he clearly uses his shoulder to dislodge Josh Okogie, who's a defender, from his space.
They're down two with seconds to go.
Yep. Luka goes for his easy bunny at the hoop, spins halfway down, comes out. Oh, Durant gets the rebound. Else. Devin Booker, talking to the ref, says, that was a foul. Like, why didn't you call it the foul? And then Luka gets in his face and say, what'd you say? And then, you know, him and Booker have words. Everyone, they had words last year in their postseason. We'll get to that Luka and Devin thing in a minute. But David, that move, this is something you talk about all the time. If that was, Andrew Nembhard versus some Marcus established Smart, superstar Holiday, veteran. Yeah. Right. For offensive foul on the young player. And this is my thing. Look, as I said to start the show, it's hard enough to fucking guard Luka as it is. If you're going to let him do that too, what are we doing? Right? Like, I mean, come on. You got to give us some legal way to guard these guys.
Well, just switch it. If it was Josh Okogie doing that to Luka, I think they would have called a foul. Wow. I think they would have called an offensive foul. I really do.
Correct.
I would love for the NBA to show me that the data says that I'm wrong, but I watch a lot of games. And that is the one place I think our NBA referees are unbelievable. I really do. Unbelievable.
They're the best.
That is the one place where I want the contact to be called or not called, regardless of who's doing it. But I do think the history of Booker, there's another matchup that we could see in the playoffs, that I think would be amazing. I don't buy Dallas. I'm not buying their defense. I buy Phoenix. I do buy Phoenix. Right. How far? I don't know yet. I got to see more Okogie. I got to see more Torrey Craig.
Yeah, got to watch him.
Kevin Durant and Booker are both, you know, they are what they are. Ayton barely scored. He had one
16 boards. Like 8 points.
Yeah, he had a late tip in with last like bucket he had, and it had been a long stretch before he scored. Chris Paul was not great, not good, just okay. Booker and Durant and defense probably could be enough until you get to maybe the top couple teams in the West. The Clippers being potentially one. Yep. We know Denver, but I want all. Give me all this bad blood. Give me the trauma. And I say that because I don't care. I'm very clinical watching these games. I have to find something smart to write about and talk about, but I want ratings to be good. I want the players to make more money. I want more people to watch. So I'm rooting for drama.
Oh, David, where'd you go? Me? Oh, here you are. You're back. You
I want
the drama
though. Yeah. I want there to be,
I
want people to watch so they can be excited. So I want to, without us getting into fights, I don't want fights. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, anybody trying to fight. Like this is, come on, this is basketball. Nobody's actually trying to fight, but you like the competitiveness and the tough physical play. No, it's, you know, I would say in that game defensively, Phoenix did a good job defending Luka. Like he wasn't hitting shots. He was missing, but they let him get away with the, you know, offensive extended arm. And he went to the free throw line 19 times or something crazy like that. Like, this is, if he's missing shots and you let him go to the line, I mean, I got no shot. But I liked your point. I think Durant and Booker, we know what they're going to be. What I thought was interesting in that game, Okogie was not good. He was 3 of 13 and 0 of 8 from three. Monty took him out and went with Wainwright and Craig instead down the stretch. They made threes. That may be what it is, right? Whoever's making, because it's clear what everyone's going to do. That fifth person, we're not guarding him because that's what they didn't guard him. So like we're going to let the person shoot shots. Whoever's making the shots is who's going to play because you can't leave guys out there who aren't making shots. You know, against the better teams, you're going to lose.
Yeah, we said this, I think, when Howard was on, like, ultimately, it's what these other guys are going to do. And there's not a lot of time to figure it out. You know, down to less than 20 games.
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, if we get this Suns-Mavs matchup again, I think that will be very interesting and very fun. The crowd can get behind it. Look, everybody's like, Booker, like, look, to me, Booker's talking to the ref, right?
Booker, like nothing wrong Luka, at all. Nothing.
Right. Luka wanting to get involved. And the thing about Luka, I love Luka. You love Luka. Let's also be fair about this. Luka whines every single play. Every play, he's whining at the ref.
Tim Duncan used to and stopped, but he was like 30 something when he stopped.
Right.
I mean, Luka, how many? 19 free throws, you said?
Yeah. He lived at the line.
And there was nothing. Yeah.
I'm like,
he couldn't complain about that. He just missed the shot. I thought Booker totally did what he should have done. And you can say that, especially after when you've got the rebound, your team going on the line. Luka's just so sensitive.
And that's what Luka said in his post game. He's like, oh, you know, it's just competition, but don't wait to talk until you're up with only 3 seconds left.
I disagree totally. That's exactly when you wait until. Some guys, I remember talking to Corey Brew at this. Corey liked to talk some shit now. But it just fed him because in his Corey,
he liked it.
Corey always played with like he was one of the rare guys that could smile all game but try to slit your throat the whole time. And in college, he was the same way, unbelievably competitive guy. But he had so much joy. It's one of the best things about Corey. I think he's a great NBA coach one day for the same reason. But it didn't bother him. But he could get under the skin of other people.
Yeah.
Well, if you can talk and not have it bother you, fine. Most players can't. It does affect them.
Right.
So I like the fact that Devin Booker didn't say shit, so pretty much the game was won.
this is I love it. Petty wars in the NBA. Yeah. You got to love it. This episode of True Hoop is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey, guys. Gerard from True Hoop here. If you had an extra hour in your day, what would you do? It's a hell of a question. Would you maybe go for a run, take a nap, read a book, or maybe show up for a friend? Now, depending on the day, any one of those would be a great idea. Most of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but the question is, time for what? If time was unlimited, how would you use it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important to you and make it a priority. Therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Now, I've been open in the past with you guys about this. I see a personal therapist as well as a couples therapist for my partner and I, and both are extremely helpful in developing positive coping skills and learning how to set boundaries. Therapy empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/TrueHoop today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. .com/TrueHoop. All right, Lakers Warriors, big win for the Lakers because every win for them is a big win. They're trying to make the playoffs. Anthony Davis had a monster game. His last four games, he's been really, really good, and he has to be because no LeBron for at least another
two and a half weeks or so. Yeah.
So Davis has got to be the All NBA two way terror. David, do you remember there was this month stretch at the beginning of the season where like, is he the best player in the NBA right now
after their bad start? Yeah.
So if he's doing this, and you've always said you like the roster, Lonnie Walker, Brown, I mean, they've got Reeves. Those guys can play and they're hitting shots. Gabriel, Jaden McDaniels was a huge pickup, like gives them athleticism. My problem is I don't understand what Darvin Ham's doing with rotation sometimes. I'm like, what? Why are you taking out everyone who can score the ball when AD's out? Like, this is a bad look. I don't get it.
I'm not speaking about him anymore. I'm rooting for him. I'm not lying. I want the Lakers have a lot of talent. I want as many competitive games as possible, and I want LeBron to be in the postseason. And I'm rooting for Darvin Ham. I just have nothing to say about him anymore.
Yeah, it just wasn't good. What did you see from the Warriors in that game defensively?
Well, they have made a pivot, and we just published an article about them today.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where they were really struggling. And Steve Kerr talked about it. Draymond talked about it. We talked about what they talked about. Mm-hmm. The last five games, to include yesterday, they're number one in the league in defense. The last 10 games are top 10. Last 15 games are top like 12 or 13. They've done better. Last night was not a good night for them. They've been kind of relying on some tricks, getting killed in first halves, playing some box and one second half to try to throw it off. I think they care more. I think the message has been received. I just don't think it's enough anymore. I last year they started the season like 18-1 or whatever it was.
Yeah, two. Yeah, they were on fire.
They've just been the same team more or less all season. They suck on the road.
Right.
Right. I just don't think they have enough talent offensively to make up for what's going to end up being at best a better than average defense, at best capable of being bad. And I just don't think they have enough this year.
And they didn't address the area we talked about, which was perimeter size inside.
Yeah. Right? Wiseman's gone.
And Anthony Davis killed them. I mean, because they had nothing to do. I mean, he's just scoring over everybody. And what you're talking about here, David, is the margins. 6 years ago,
right,
they had margin of error that was real wide. Well, they're older now. Margin of error is razor thin now. And we see it. This is what I've been saying for weeks. Everybody's like, oh, but Steph's not here. Look, Steph played most of the season, right? Like, and they were basically a 500 and be a game or two above 500 team. Again, you are what your record says you are. They're middling on offense, about 15th, and they're, as you said, 12th on defense, right? So those are not markers that indicate a team that's going to win four rounds and win the NBA championship, right? It's just not there.
If they finish the season, so let's say from March the February 25th till April 9th, the end of the season, they're top three in defense. Mm-hmm. I don't think they will be, but if they are, we have to respect their offensive talent with Curry especially. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's likely to see him finish that strong. And their offense just isn't good enough to not win without a really elite defense like they had last year. And yeah, it's going to be a lost year.
And I want to be fair about something. They have not had Andrew Wiggins for a considerable amount of time now. He's away from the team dealing with a personal family matter. There's been no update on when he's back or what that situation is. And that matters, right? Because that is their young wing defender who you put on the other team's best wing guy. He's rebounding. He was amazing in the finals last year. And that hurts them, right? Because this team doesn't have a lot of athleticism and youth on the wing. Something happened during the game, David, that the broadcast was saying, and it drove me crazy. Talking about Kevon Looney, one of our favorite players. And they talked about, you know, how he plays every game. And, you know, of course, it's with Van Gundy and Mark Jackson, who, you know. So he says, you know, we talk about sports scientists, and the sports scientists say, you know, we try to play less and rest and do all different things. Well, he's got a different sports scientist, and he believes in playing every game, and some guys are just built different. And that just drove me up a freaking wall. And it's like, we can't have the league's broadcast partners pumping that message out there that, quote unquote, some guys are built different. This idea that players don't want to play is stupid. You know it because you talk to players all the time. When a player has to sit, it's done kicking and screaming. If they're injured, that's one thing. But when the sports science guys say they got to sit and rest, you know, David, because you talk to them, and I know because I've talked. It's usually not a friendly conversation, right? Like, it's a lot of back and forth. No, I'm playing. Screw that. Whatever. But ultimately, these teams want to protect these players and protect the long-term money, especially those guys they put $250 million into. They don't want them getting these non-contact injuries. And again, this ties into the load management thing. And the conversation around this is bad. And again, the league's partners have to stop putting this drivel out there that players don't want to play, because it's not true.
It's just bad business. Last night I spoke to a player who's a pivotal player for a team that thinks they can win a championship. And he's a little hurt. And he's going to be a game time decision today. And I texted him this morning. I said, make sure you call me when you hear today what the doctors say. But I texted this morning. He's not in the East time zone, so he was still asleep. Be smart about this, because playing one game and risk the rest of the season is just bad business. If you sit another game, and then your chances of getting hurt go way down going forward, that's the easy play. If you feel great today, play. Of course you play. It's Kevon Looney's been injured his whole career. And I understand why he wants to play and all that's great, but it's just stupid. It's like a parent telling your kid something that potentially could damage them long term for the sake of having pride for today. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I agree. And part of it is, look, we need the science isn't clear on it, right? In the sense that there isn't pointing measures that say, okay, if you sit 20 games or whatever you sit for the season, your percentage of injury like number goes to this number, right? I think that's the hard numbers that people want to see. We don't have enough data to support it because of this fight we're having where players don't want to sit and they don't, right? So the actual sports science staff doesn't get to put you on a regimen to prove it. But anecdotally, there's a reason why Duncan played till he was 38 years old and they were still a competitive team winning championship.
Well, they were like, using sports science when no one else was. When Catapult.
Correct.
I also thought about this, and I've not talked to you guys about this. Henry, I know, would like to talk about it. Dame Lillard missed all of last year.
All of last year.
I'm not sure he played a game, or maybe more than three or four games.
Played a little bit in the beginning, I think.
He's having a career season. You could argue it's coincidence. I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing it's not coincidence. And so I'm telling you, I've been wondering if LeBron's going to take a year off next year. I've been wondering if he's got the record. He sees what Dame's doing. I'm just wondering if he doesn't take a year off so that he can play a couple years with his son. I'm just throwing it out there. I don't think it's likely he wants to play. I do think that there's some smoke there that it may make some sense. But to your point, I like Mike Breen just fine. I don't think he should be saying stupid shit like that. And that it's not the only dumb thing he said. I don't like these narratives that these announcers dream up because they think it's good for the audience. When he said the Lakers almost lost the game but didn't, and he said this is the kind of game they would have lost early on. Well, how early are we talking about? They started 2-10, not 0-10, 2-10. They're 29-24 since. Not world beating, but better than average.
Above 500.
What are you talking about? Are you telling me they haven't lost a close game in a while? No. they win some of these games. They lose some of these games. The better teams win most of them. The lesser teams win a little less of them. This is the coin flip games. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be dumbed down to just. There's enough storyline anyway to not have to create these narratives, which is what they used to do. And I like Mike Breen just fine. I just tell us the truth. We don't need the made up narratives.
Amen to that. But again, those four games yesterday were
good for the NBA.
And excellent for the NBA guys. 17, 18 games to go. Pay attention to your team because this stuff matters. And who's going to be seeding? I want to talk about Philly really quick. Do they have a shot to get that 2 seed? Because I just think whoever of Boston, Philly, Milwaukee gets the 3 seed, as you know, their road's just tougher to get to the NBA Finals because now they got to beat both the teams ahead of them if the seedings hold out, as opposed to only one of them. How many games in between
Milwaukee and Philly?
Let me check right now. I want to say probably two. Let's see. So Milwaukee's at the top. Boston a game and a half behind. Philly 4.5 behind Milwaukee. And so they're only 3 games behind Boston.
I didn't realize. God, I didn't realize Milwaukee overtook Boston because of their winning streak. And Boston's not been playing as well lately. I don't think it's likely Philly overtakes them, but I still think they can win the East. Yeah.
You still think they can go through both? They can beat both teams.
I don't think it's as likely as that they don't have to play both teams.
Right.
Yeah, I think James Harden looks terrific right now. Embiid's unbelievable. They're deep as hell. I don't think Doc's the best coach, but they're the ones who knocked off Milwaukee. Yeah,
they sure
they're capable of being really good, and they've got lots of shooting. They're really loaded. Maxey's terrific.
Very good.
Yeah,
very good.
I think that I think those top
Melton's been a good pickup for them.
Oh, for sure. I think those top three teams are better than Denver. I really do. I mean, Denver is very good, but I think those three teams are better.
Well, for Denver, we know what it's going to come down to. Defense, we talked about, and Michael Porter Jr., right? Like, is he that reliable third person? Or on some nights, can he be number two? You're better than Jamal Murray tonight.
I also think it's not just that, though. Their bench unit worries me. We've talked about it before. They need to withstand the non-Jokic minutes, and that's not just about the center, Jokic, Thomas Bryant. Thomas got hurt the other day, and Aaron Gordon played the five and did well. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting. I want to see Mike play with his second unit some. He's more like Taylor Jenkins. He's kind of a set lineup, but lately he's been playing Murray a little bit in the second unit. I like that. But I, you know, Bruce Brown's good. How good? Let's see. Reggie Jackson, I'm a little suspicious of. Yeah. I like the East teams better.
The ability of your team to manage the minutes when your superstar player is off, right? That's the key for so many playoff teams. And this is why, to put a bow on it, you like a team like Phoenix, right? Because you're like, they can always have two guys on the floor that can make stuff work, right? And I think now is the time, even though you're trying to like lock in a seed, play with it, right? Can we run a bunch of minutes with just CP and Ayton? I mean, they should, right? Pick and roll. You should be able to be fine with that with shooters. Have a bunch of Booker KD minutes. Same thing in Milwaukee, right? Like Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton minutes should be fine without Giannis, right? Like who can do it without their number one alpha guy off the floor? That's
yeah, it'll be a cool chess match as to the teams that decide, you know what, let me play my best players when they're resting theirs. See if we can't get a run and then defend it when our studs resting and they're playing their guy. That's why I think defense matters so much is we can keep you from scoring and get our guy Kitty rest and not lose a big lead. But in theory, that's the idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, practice is something different. Last thing, one of Coach's favorite players, his first professional client.
My first NBA client.
Mistaken.
Yeah. Before he was in the NBA, I had him.
Udonis Haslam. The word is out. This will be his last season. He's like, they got to get somebody else in here.
He said, I'm done.
I'm done with this. I mean, he's in his 40s now. It's time to do something else.
Yeah. But I won't go into great detail now because we'll save it when he actually is done in the playoffs. But I've told this story probably once before to you. It's one of my all-time favorite stories. And I have a lot. I'll tell you two quick ones. One is Udonis really likes to be challenged, very much so. And I learned that about him. I knew his coach from high school really well, Frank Martin. I saw Udonis in high school. I knew Billy well. He played at Florida where I went and years before. And so I used to have free throw shooting contests every day after our workouts. We probably had 6, 7, 8 pros in the gym, of which he was trying out for the Miami Heat team. He was on the Summer League team and he played for the Spurs Summer League later that summer. So this was part of the Summer Leagues. And we would do a free throw shooting contest. And we played. You ever played golf? You know the game golf and the free throw shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So like a swish is a birdie. If you make it, it's par. If it hits the rim, and if it's a bogey, if you hit the rim and miss or just miss, period. Mm-hmm. And so, but I used to seed them. So I would have and always make Udonis the last seed. First of all, he was the worst free throw shooter. If you look at his numbers in college, and all the other guys were better free throw shooters, but he won a lot. And one day he just got so mad at me. He was 22 years old. He was a year and played in France for a year first. He graduated high school, college at 21. He said to me, Coach Thorpe, man, you seed me last every day and I keep winning. Like what's going on with that? And I want to say, are you fucking that dumb, Udonis? Like, you don't think I know what's going on? But what I said was very sweetly, I said, well, you know, UD, I just think you get sharper when you're pissed. I said in a sweet way. He's like he just kind of listened, right? He was very determined. But my favorite story, and I have many, was having lunch with him at a little Greek place in a place called Northwood Plaza, right by where I used to live. It's still there now. And we had worked out first, and the guys were soaking wet. And, you know, there was probably 7, 8 of us going to have lunch there. And I sat with him at a little table for two outside because we were so sweaty. We don't want to sit inside and smell the place up.
Right.
They were sweaty. And we're just having our little gyros, you know, 12 o'clock on a June day. And he looked up at me. I was sitting right across from him. And he said, Coach Thorpe, do you think this can really happen? Can I make it? Because he had not made it the year before. And I just wanted to hug him. I didn't have kids at that point. Yeah, I had 2-year-old kids. They were young. This was 03. So my kids were 2. I just wanted to hug him. Like, he just such a, he was so vulnerable in that moment. Like, I'm working, he basically said, I'm working my ass off, but do I have to go back to France? And I told him, I think we're on a good plan here. We're going to play defense and we're going to rebound to make the league. And then I'll teach you how to shoot to get you paid. Literally exactly what I said to him. It's exactly what we did. So he's one of my all-time favorites. Unbelievable winner. So selfless. So tough. Also, by the way, highest IQ among 2 or 3 of anyone I've ever coached. Off the chart basketball IQ. He'd make an amazing head coach. But he's a restaurateur, entrepreneur. He doesn't have to coach. He doesn't want to. He has a lot of practice as the assistant coach. Highest paid assistant coach of all time. Right? He's been paying, they're paying him millions to be an assistant coach for years. I don't know what he's going to do next. I really do think I'm going to try to get down for his last game and see him. Yeah, but I just love that guy so much, man.
No, that's, I mean, and this is what you're in the business for, right? You always say, we first coach to inspire, right? That's, and little Udonis, well, not little, because he wasn't little, but young Udonis Haslam. Coach, you think this is going to happen?
Like, yeah, I mean, he had lost a bunch of weight in Europe, and I had told him he should keep it off. Other people had said, no, you're too thin. I said, it didn't work muscular. He was really muscular. He went from 275 to 222 when he first walked on my gym. Not because I helped him lose weight. He was already down to that. He ended up getting to 230, I think, middle of his rookie season in 03. So he just didn't know, like, is this skinny version going to make it? Like, no way did he ever think 20 years. Like, Randy Fun was a GM. He told us on the day he signed, your boy will never dress for a game as a rookie. He'll never dress. He's on the team. He was only guaranteed $75,000, I think, to go to camp. He ended up starting the first 18 games, made the rookie sensation of the game. My wife and I flew to LA for the game. Like, what he's done is a remarkable story. It really is.
Yeah. These are the best stories. And this is why Coach Stork does what he does. If you guys have no idea, like, when he's talking about how he knows these guys, these are the relationships he has amazing with these guys. Like, he's in this for real. This isn't, you know, just some fly-by-night kind of thing. All right, folks. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We will see you later on this week. Take care.